Time to take a look at Apple computers and the accessories that come with Apple computers. Larry Mueller here with my guest Joel Rhodes, Macintosh support specialist in Madison, and really pleased to have him back to talk with us again. You may have a question maybe about purchasing a Mac, or maybe you have a question about accessories or something going funny with your own computer, with your own Mac. I hope you'll join us. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. And Joe, welcome back.
Hey, great to be here. Thanks.
Apple has updated its line of desktop computers. Didn't take much in the way of price cuts, but...
Well, you know, and the updates were fairly minor.
Yeah.
They are slowly moving their architecture to a new graphics chip, which is more energy efficient, less expensive to produce, and has pretty good performance. The big price cut actually was in their top-of-the-line 24-inch iMac, which did come down by $300.
Yeah, that's quite a bit.
But there's no getting around it. Apple does cater towards the higher end of the computer market. And it looks like, you know, you buy an iMac and you're going, wow, that's you know, $1,100, $1,400. That's a ton of money. And it is. But when you start adding up all the features that Apple includes that are not included in some of the other computers, it actually comes out reasonably mm-hmm. consistent. But you're buying the top of the line model. You're buying the car with all the options, not the car with the manual transmission and roll up windows.
Yeah.
So it's a little tough to compare sometimes. But and there's also a cost with Apple's, you know, high degree of design and styling. They spend a lot of time and effort and money making these machines look really good, be really solid, not look like a clunky, ugly thing. It's almost a piece of art sitting on your desk. And for some people, that's something they're willing to
do. It's worth some money.
Yeah.
All right. Well, every line is filled, so let's go to the phones. And Sarah in Madison's up first. Sarah, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
Hi, Sarah.
I have a question about my MacBook email. I use .Mac email, so I have a mobile me account.
Okay.
And use the email feature that's in my MacBook. And I'm not on Leopard. I'm on one of the most updated versions of Tiger.
Okay.
And I'm wondering if it's possible to password protect just the email account as opposed to the whole login process. I went into my mail preferences, and I can't find a place that would just require a password to open up the email on the computer as opposed to the initial login. Because I share my computer with a couple folks that I don't want to be able to do that. But
sure.
I'm wondering if that's possible even.
The only way to do it is with multiple accounts. In Mac
okay.
OS X, that's really you can't, that I'm aware of, you can't lock down specific applications.
Okay.
One option you have if you just is it the email that you currently have in your inbox, or is it you don't want them seeing your new stuff, things like that? Because your Mac, of course, remembers your email password. And one way of doing it is you could have your mail application not remember your password, so it wouldn't be able to retrieve new email, but they'd still be able to launch the application and see what you already have.
Yeah, it's kind of, I want to restrict access to the whole application.
Yeah, that's your best bet really there is to have a separate user account. Now, you can turn on fast user switching in the accounts preferences, which means that you'd be able to stay logged in, keep all of your documents open, keep your web browser open, all of that sort of thing, and then just have them switch into that alternate user. So you wouldn't necessarily have to jump out of everything that you're in the middle of doing.
Oh, well, that's not so
okay.
bad.
Yeah, so if you the trick there is you want to make sure your MacBook has plenty of RAM because you're essentially opening up a second instance of all of these applications. But I would take a look at fast user switching and setting up a secondary user account. That way, when you walk away from the computer, you can just say, you know, switch to user B, and Apple does this really neat graphics transition where it looks like a giant cube flipping on your screen.
Oh, nifty.
Yeah, it's just because they could.
Yeah,
and then it'll just switch to this other user, and unless that, you know, then put a password on your account so that that user B can't switch back to user A without that password, and that will keep all your stuff private and separate, but still running, and user B can do their stuff, and then as long as you know user B's password, you can switch back at any time.
Oh, okay, great.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thanks so much.
Thanks, Sarah, for calling. Kelly in Oshkosh, we turn to you next. Hi, Kelly.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is, I fried my daughter's MacBook.
Oh, boy.
I watered it, which was not good. And then we took it to the Apple store, and they wanted $800 to fix it. They said it needed a new Logos board. So they had a sale going on at the time, so we just bought her a brand new one, and then they pulled all our information off the old hard drive and put it on the new computer.
Okay.
So that's all good, but I have this dead MacBook sitting in my closet, and I'm wondering if you have any ideas about what I should do with it. I don't want to put it in the landfill.
Yeah. I short of finding someone else who has a MacBook of similar vintage that maybe did something like broke the screen, like they dropped it and broke the screen.
Okay.
Where you could, and I don't know how handy you're feeling, where you could probably try and, if you potentially you could find a used one that's got some different defect than yours. I think you probably damaged the motherboard.
Okay.
And so if you could find something that had a good motherboard or even a used motherboard on eBay, you could potentially take this apart and put it back together.
Someone
could.
Okay.
But this is why it cost $800 from Apple, because the part's very expensive and there's a fair amount of labor that goes on along with that, and it's not easy. The other option is finding a good place to recycle it, or, and I'm sorry I don't have any details on this, but I know there are sometimes programs at prisons or schools or things like that where they want to take apart computers to teach people how they come apart, how they go back together. You might be able to find a program like that where somebody could at least learn how to take apart a laptop, what all the parts look like, without fear of damaging a new computer, because it's already non-running. Why not take it apart and find out what it looks like?
Okay. Well, those are all really good ideas. Yeah.
You might actually try a school. That would actually be a great demonstration for children.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, because kids are innately curious, but they can't take apart the computers they have.
Right.
So give them a dead one to take apart.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Kelly, for calling. Pete in Waterford, we're on to you now. Hi, Pete.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
I have a MacBook, and all of a sudden it decided that the SuperDrive didn't want to accept CDs or DVDs. It would accept them, they'd fire up to high speed, and then it would cut off and spit them out.
Hmm. And this happens with pretty much any disk you've tried to use?
The only one that it would accept was the Apple disk. I went in and to see if there was a hard drive or a hardware problem,
mm-hmm.
and it ran the whole thing and said no hardware problem.
Hmm. Just out of curiosity, were the other disks you put in there ones that have been burned instead of ones that were like factory pressed, like an audio CD?
Oh, they were probably burned. Yeah.
I'm guessing here because I'm really not too in tune with what goes on inside of a CD-ROM. But my hunch is, I know that CDs that are burned are not quite of the same caliber as ones that are pressed from the factory. That's just the mechanics of how they're produced. And sometimes if a CD drive or the little laser is getting a little out of focus or it's not quite right, as they get older, sometimes they have trouble with ones that are burned, but they're still okay with ones that are pressed. So, for example, the Apple one that you put in there, that was pressed at the factory, so that was made the original method.
Right.
And I wonder if maybe that's what's happening. That still doesn't help you because you probably have a ton of burned CDs that you'd like to have access to or CDs you'd like to burn.
Right.
In which case, your best bet is to see if you can get that drive replaced.
Uh-huh.
There are places online, and I think, if memory serves, one of them is called Otherworld Computing, and they're very Mac-focused. And if you go to MacSales.com, they may even have a service where you can send yours in. They will pull out the drive, put in a brand new one, and send it back to you for a fixed fee.
Mm-hmm.
So you might investigate something like that, or you can check a local Mac repair shop around your area and see if... Because the drives themselves are not terribly expensive. I want to say they're anywhere between $50 and $70.
Well, I could probably do that myself.
Well, if you're handy with the screwdriver, there's a ton of very small screws, and you will need... You will need a number zero Phillips head screwdriver, and those are not nearly as common as you'd think.
I have one, though.
Oh, perfect. Uh-huh. So, yeah, if you're feeling handy, you can buy just the drive online, like this Otherworld Computing I was telling you about. They're very Mac-friendly. They're very set up. You can say, hey, I've got this kind of Mac laptop, and they'll say, here's the different drives that are available for you. So it's probably the drive is just starting to go, is my guess. I'm guessing on this one, but
yeah.
I'm pretty good guess. Probably a pretty good guess.
Okay.
And changing that would be your best bet.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling, Pete. Katie in Green Bay, we're on to you now. Hi, Katie. Katie, are you there?
You there?
Yes, go ahead.
Sorry about that. You said that you also worked with Entourage, or I shouldn't say add-ons. I have Entourage, and I've been mm-hmm. experiencing a problem. Are you familiar with Entourage?
Somewhat familiar. It's not my day-to-day driver, but I've helped some folks with it.
Okay. Well, my problem is that I am getting a bad login, bad whatever. that I had password, I can't get into my emails sometimes. And it comes up with the same error message, which is 17099. But yet I can go out with the same email address and the same password to my Safari and go into AOL there, and everything works just fine. But through Entourage, I can receive emails. I can't send them out. And
oh,
is it
just sending mail out that's the trouble in Entourage?
Yes, and I sent out three emails this morning, and I was replying to there was somebody that I was corresponding with, and this was like the third reply. And all of a sudden, it kicked in and said, nope, you're not going to be able to send any more emails. So anything else I tried to send out would not work.
Got it. The first thing I would check is potentially your outgoing mail server settings might need some tweaking.
Okay.
And this is very much dependent on who your mail provider is. And so I don't know off the top of my head what this is for America Online.
Right.
But what you'd like to do is go to America Online and start searching around for SMTP settings.
Okay.
That's for Simple Mail Transfer Protocol.
Right.
If you think about this in terms of like the regular post office, you can drop your mail off in any post box, right? But you can only get your mail from your local, the mail provider that's set up for you.
Correct.
And this is how the internet was set up. But what happened was people were starting to use, the spam was catching on, and they were just dumping huge amounts of mail in any post box they could find. So now these post boxes have a little security guard that sits there and says, prove to me you're someone that I should take mail from.
Okay.
And even more so, your internet provider, which could be, you know, Charter or AT&T or Verizon or anyone else, they're also putting roadblocks to try and slow down this flood of spam. So the long story short is there are certain hurdles or hoops you have to jump through so that you can legitimately send mail. And my hunch is, and this just it's kind of a guess, but I think that AOL, the account you have set up, the SMTP settings or the outgoing mail server settings need to be tweaked, and you'd have to check with AOL to find out exactly what those are. Typically, it will be a different port number, and these you'll have to check exactly what they are, but they're usually 587 or 465. And they might also require that you have SSL encryption. That's becoming much more common these days, and it also is, you know, it raises the security bar on that. And you probably have to have a username and password as well. And I'm sure you have that already, or you know what that is. But if you check with AOL settings, and that's, you know, this is more common for most internet service providers, but AOL will have their specific settings on what that should be. They should have a section that will help you set that up.
Okay. All right. Well, I will check that out because I was about to email AOL anyway, but since I heard that you were into working with add-ons, I thought I would check with you, and I appreciate your help.
Yeah, check their support pages. I'm sure someone else has had the same trouble.
Thank you very much for calling. And John in Milwaukee, we'll get to you in just a second. Just a reminder, our guest today, Joe Rhodes, self-employed Macintosh support specialist, works out of Madison. Joe, what's your website? You've got a website. What's
that? Yeah, my website is joerhodes.com. And that's R-H-O-D-E-S. And there's a section there called WPR where I try to blog about, and I try, unfortunately, where I talk about things that, questions that frequently come up or tips or tricks or things that sometimes are misunderstood and people need a little clarification on. I try to follow it up there.
JoeRhodes.com/WPR.
You betcha.
All right. Joe Rhodes, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You can join in with your Apple computer question as we visit with Joe Rhodes. The number is 1-800-642-1234, and you can email us at talk@wpr.org. And, Joe, we do have an email from Jonathan who says, I've heard that Apple video programs are easier to use and much more stable than any other products on the market. Is this true? Why? Can you give me some examples, and what would be a good starter system?
Sure. Well, I actually don't use anything but the Apple video products, so I can't say I have a ton of experience with the other ones and how they work. But Apple has really put a lot of effort into making their machines really elegant and easy to use when it comes to editing video, audio, getting kids to start recording instruments, things like that. And they've gotten just really critical acclaim for how well their software package does. And every review I've ever read says there's really not much out there that touches it, either in the low end or in the high end. So if you're thinking about, you know, just kind of getting your paws wet and you've got a little video camera and you want to play with it and see how it works, every new Mac comes with a package called iLife. And the current version is iLife 09. If you have an older Mac, you can go buy iLife 09 for $79. So this is really not a huge expenditure. iLife includes a program called iMovie, which makes it really, really simple to plug in a supported camera, bring your movies in, and start editing them, start clipping out the pieces that you want, ignoring the pieces you don't, put transitions, titles, special effects, all of this stuff. And it is very easy to use. I mean, I am not an artistic guy whatsoever. I'm an engineer. And I can figure this out. So it's got to be pretty easy to use. And the nice part is it's very professional looking when you're done. You have multiple ways of exporting it then. You can export this either to, with the latest version of iMovie, you can export it right to YouTube if you want. You can export it to iDVD, and you can make a very professional-looking DVD that plays in any normal DVD player. And you can even make menus and chapter markers and all those things that you would find on a professionally done Hollywood movie. You can make this on your very own DVD, and they look very, very professional. So that's a great way to get started. If your video needs are a little more advanced, and you start saying, you know, I want to do something with, I want a little more control, I want to start doing things that are a little more involved, I want to, you know, do multiple sources, things like that, they have a product called Final Cut Express. And Final Cut Express is kind of a midpoint in their market that includes some of their Power Pro features, but not, you know, it's fairly inexpensive. I want to say it's $200 or $300.
Okay.
And then if you are a Hollywood producer and you're going to go full bore and you're going to make something, this is your living, they have a package called Final Cut Studio. And Final Cut Studio, you literally could make a Hollywood feature release with this. It includes all the tools. It includes an application called Sound Booth that lets you edit all the audio in a real professional environment. Very high-end video tools. It lets you, you know, package this all up, and it's huge. It's like 5 or 6 DVDs, and it requires an enormously powerful computer. I've installed it already, and it's pretty impressive looking when you see the 5 DVDs, and you have to feed them all into the computer. But that's, I want to say, $2,000 or $3,000. But if you're in the market, if you're in the market, you know, normally this used to be a package that cost you $20,000 with Avid Cinema or something like that. So Apple has brought the price point down for these very powerful tools. They brought it down a lot. But even their entry-level iMovie, it lets you do some pretty remarkable things that we just couldn't do even 5, 6 years ago. So
for a few bucks.
If you do choose to buy iLife 09 and you already have a Mac, check very closely about the system requirements, because iMovie 09 does need a fairly beefy Mac to do all of the magic that it can do. So make sure you check that out before you plunk down your $79.
All right, let's go to John in Milwaukee next. John, hi to you.
Hello. I'm calling about my MacBook. I think it's the first generation MacBook.
Okay.
And I'm wondering what is the best way to back it up. I have a flash drive that I bought for the purpose of backing up, but from what I've found, it seems like, do I have to buy a program that makes it easier to back up everything, or can I just use the disk image feature?
Sure. Hey, John, are you running macOS 10.4 or 10.5?
I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. I'll give you a couple of pointers for both, and you can find out pretty easy the next time you're in front of your Mac. Just go under the Apple menu and say about this computer or about this Mac, and it will tell you exactly what it's running.
Okay.
With macOS 10.4, you have to you can do it manually, or you can use some software that'll help you automate it. Generally,
it is 10.4, actually.
Okay, it is 10.4. Perfect.
Correct.
There's a couple ways of backing up. The first thing you have to decide is where you're going to put this stuff. Now, you have a flash drive, and that's not huge, but it might cover the real essential stuff that you need to back up. Maybe you have a folder full of Word documents that are really, really important. You got to have those, and everything else, well, if you lost it, it wouldn't be that big a deal.
Well, I'm pretty sure the memory on the flash drive is more than I have on the computer.
Probably not, just because the biggest flash drive I've seen in circulation is like a 4 or 8 gigs, and I think even from the factory they shipped with a 40 gig hard drive.
Okay.
You might be thinking about the RAM, which you probably
I guess I'm thinking of just like an external hard drive.
Yeah, and I was
that
just
has like flash memory, I think.
I was just going to say that your best, most economical, and easy-to-use bet is an external hard drive.
Okay.
And you can get those anywhere from, you know, 80 gigs to a terabyte, and they're,
uh-huh.
they're very inexpensive. So your best bet is to get one of those. That's your bucket where you're going to put your stuff. Now, the next question is, how do you get your stuff there? Now, you could just attach it to your Mac and every so often, you know, drag the folders that are important to you over to this external hard drive and call it a backup. The problem is that relies on you to remember to do that, and if you're anything like me, other things get in the way, the dog
right.
needs to be walked and all this other stuff, and you forget to do it.
Right.
In which case, a backup program that will automatically do this for you is a great idea. With macOS 10.4, there's a couple of options you have. One is called LaCie Silverkeeper. There it is. And that's free, and that does, you know, pretty basic, but does its job. You set it every so often. You point it at a folder that you want to have backed up, and you point it to a folder where you want it to go, and you say, do this every day. There's a slightly more featureful program called Sync, which is spelled S-Y-N-K. And if you Google for it, you'll find it fairly quickly. And that's also a really good program that I used before I moved to macOS 10.5. macOS 10.5 changes the game somewhat because now Apple has built-in backup software, and it's great. I have a post on my blog, which we were just talking about earlier, that will tell you about backing up your Mac, including how to do a massive, huge, super deluxe backup. So if you are going to, say, replace your hard drive and you want to back up every bit on your hard drive, I have instructions for that. And then I also have instructions for how to do, you know, a couple of daily drivers. Hey, I want to have my home folder with my email and my bookmarks and my documents and my photos. I want that backed up, you know, 2-3 times a week, every day, whatever it is. I also have a post that describes that. So if you go to joerodes.com/WPR, and if you poke around in there somewhere, do a search for it, you should find a couple of postings on backing up macOS 10.4, along with the two programs I was just talking about.
All right.
Hey, can you just tell me the name of that? LaCie, was it called? Silverkeeper?
I think it's called LaCie Silverkeeper. LaCie makes backup external hard drives, and they're very Mac-friendly. And so they wrote a utility and gave it away. And if you Google for it, you'll find it very fast. That is a free backup utility. And yeah, it's very no-frills, very basic, but if your needs are that's what you need, it's perfect.
Is it LaCie?
LaCie, yes.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And let's go to Paul in Soldier's Grove next. Hi, Paul.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for the opportunity. I have a iMac that runs 10.4, and I'm trying to get it to work with an old workhorse HP printer I have that has a parallel port. And I've tried a lot of different things. I bought a USB to parallel cable.
Mm-hmm.
And I changed the print driver. I used a Guten print driver. Usually what happens is after a while the printer will say it's received the data, but it won't print it. It'll print for a while, and then something will shut off the USB hub. And I'm wondering about some other solutions. Is there a way to run it through the network cable or... maybe buy one of those HP JetDirect cards. Are those reliable?
You know, Paul, I was just going to ask you, does this thing have a network capability built into it already? Does it have a port on the back that looks like a network cable would go into it, the printer?
No, the printer only has a parallel thing and then another one that looks sort of like those external video ports.
Sure. Do you know, does this printer have macOS 10 drivers?
Yeah, you can go to HP and get the OS 10 drivers.
Okay.
And I tried that, and then I tried the Guten print driver, and neither one of them...
Sure. My hunch is you're probably getting caught up with that parallel to USB converter, because quite frankly, those things were a little flaky at best. And I remember them from the local talk to USB converters. They were always kind of a gee, I hope this works kind of thing. What you might try, and you're fighting an uphill battle here with an older printer, and I've actually got a client where I'm currently fighting this battle, and it's the printers are just macOS 10 is creating more and more complex print jobs, and the printers were just not ready for that. But Here's a suggestion. You can give it a try and see how it works.
Okay.
You should be able to buy a network adapter that is a parallel port to network adapter. And I used to get them at CompUSA, but they're no longer. So I'm not quite sure where you're going to get it, but they're usually, you know, $30, something like that. And it's just got a parallel port on one side, and it's got a network cable on the other. And you'll have to configure that so it matches your local network. And I'm assuming you probably have a network set up, or you could. So then you'll have an Ethernet cable coming out the backside of this, and you plug that into your network. And I'm being very vague in that network part because I'm hoping you have one and know what you're doing there.
Uh-huh.
But once you have that set up via IP, the Mac should be able to print, hopefully using HP's drivers, directly to that box, and that box will probably be more reliable than your USB to parallel converter. So these boxes, it's essentially what a JetDirect box is it takes the network, you know, the network infrastructure and converts it to a parallel port. And those actually are fairly popular and reasonably reliable for making non-network printers into network printers. And I suspect you'll have a little bit better luck printing to this thing as a network printer. But again, complex print jobs, especially anything coming from like Adobe InDesign or Photoshop or something like that, you could cause this thing to choke regardless.
Oh. Do you recommend any brands of those network adapters?
No, they're pretty interchangeable. I know Netgear makes one. You could look for a Netgear one. I haven't, you know, I last one I purchased was a couple years ago. I think I still have a spare in my box o' miscellanea for just this kind of thing. So
yeah. Okay, well, thanks a lot for your help.
Yeah,
you bet.
Good luck.
Thanks for calling, and let's go to Alec in Greenfield next. Hi, Alec.
Hi. Good morning. This is a question of what to avoid in looking for a used or refurbished MacBook, laptop, or Pro.
Mm-hmm.
What is it that consistently comes up in front of you that's quirky about any of those models? My only consideration would be is that they can accept 10.5,
mm-hmm.
but either in terms of processor speed or which generation they were or some other kind of configuration, which ones pop up time and time again that are quirky?
Well, I can't say I've run into any that were particularly quirky. The few quirks that Apple did have, they were able to address with firmware updates.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the question I have for you is, what do you want to do with this guy once you have him?
Well, you had addressed before that the iLife 09 is of interest, and then I need something that can handle any of the common PC applications that people send to me that sometimes my older G4s just stumble around with.
So you're thinking about running Parallels and then a copy of Windows as well?
Something like that, yes.
Okay. That actually helps this a lot.
Okay.
If you can, you want to look for a MacBook that has a Core 2 Duo processor. And this is different than the Core Duo processor. There's that number 2 in the end.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, it's not even that simple because they had different derivations of this. But what you're looking for, some of these MacBooks will hold more than 2 gigabytes of RAM.
Mm-hmm.
The first MacBooks would only hold 2 gigabytes of RAM. And as somebody who's got a MacBook Pro that will only hold 2 gigs of RAM, it makes running Windows very slow because you have to dissect maybe a third to a half of your RAM for Windows.
Mm-hmm.
And now the rest of your Mac slows down.
Okay.
And I'm really wishing I could put more than 2 gigs of memory in my laptop, and that's what's eventually going to get me to buy a new laptop is I'm starved for memory. So you'll want to look around and look for one that is capable of handling more than 2 gigs. So they had one that was capable of 3 and then shortly after was capable of 4.
Okay.
And 4 gigs of RAM is actually pretty comfortable, so you can run, you know, say a gig for Windows, and then you have 3 gigs for Mac OS X, and it seems almost absurd to talk about that much RAM, but these days it's almost nothing. You can buy 4 gigs of RAM online for $40,
right,
something like that, $40-$50. So there's no reason not to have it unless you have a machine that can't handle it.
So it's really more of an issue about the RAM, less an issue about the processor speed or anything else.
Right.
Okay.
And even the hard drive on the MacBooks, the hard drives are drop-dead simple to replace. Mm-hmm. You open up where the battery goes, you take out 3 little screws, this little metal bracket comes out, and the whole hard drive just pops out.
Okay.
And you can easily get a new hard drive if you need a bigger hard drive or a faster hard drive. So don't worry about the hard drive. Those are easy to upgrade on the MacBooks. Right. It's the available, the RAM. That's really what you'd probably want to look for.
And you're saying, just repeat that again, please. You're saying Core 2 as in the number 2.
The number 2. It's the Core 2 Duo. And I'll give you a hint. There is an application out there called Mac Tracker. And if you find that and download it, it will tell you every detail about every Mac ever produced.
Okay.
And so you can go through the Mac tracker and figure out exactly which MacBook will handle exactly how much memory. And that'll give you a feel for, okay, I need a Core 2 Duo that goes at least this speed. So when you're looking through eBay or the want ads or whatnot, you can find one that's got exactly those specs. I will tell you, though, the price you're going to pay for a used MacBook is going to be within spitting distance of a brand new one. Apple laptops hold their value in a way that just baffles me.
Right.
Because people, they there's no reason to throw out one of these machines that has 4 gigs of RAM because it's a perfectly serviceable machine. So it's very rare that people actually need to get rid of it.
But the same question would apply even if it's a refurbished one off of Apple's site or a new one. It's the RAM issue here that's
correct.
Right.
Key.
Correct. And most of the refurbished or new ones will all hold at least 4. And I think the newest MacBooks, the aluminum ones, will hold up to 6 or 8.
Now, that may not be enough.
Yeah, well, that also gets very expensive right now. But that'll come down too.
Thanks, Alec. Thank you for calling. Good luck. Maureen in Dubuque, Iowa. We're on to you now. Hi, Maureen.
Hi, good morning. I wanted to ask Joe about, I have an iMac G5. It's about 4 years old. Mm-hmm. And I took it to a Mac dealer because the display started fragmenting, and I was told it's a logic board problem and it's not worth fixing, and I've since gone on discussion boards and things like that, and it seems like a lot of these machines were having that problem, especially ones with a W8 serial number.
Okay.
But I just wondered if you had heard anything, if Mac was going to do anything to fix those, or if it's just to the scrap heap kind of thing.
Well, I can't say I've heard anything specific about those, but I'm not actually officially affiliated with Apple. I just happen to work with them a lot and have learned things along the way. So I don't have any privy to any special news. But
okay. My
hunch is, given the age of those machines, Apple is probably thinks that they did their civic duty in making it a decent computer.
Right.
It, what they're saying with the logic board sounds correct. More specifically, it sounds like the video chip is failing. But the video chip is built into the main logic board, or sometimes called the motherboard. So it's not something you can, take out the spark plug and put a new one in.
Yeah.
You kind of have to replace the whole engine.
Yeah, because they were saying like $800, and to me, it's time for me to go like wireless in a laptop anyway. Mm. Which leads me to my second question.
Okay.
Is the difference in the entry level iBook at like less than $1,000 starting to like the Mac Pro Book starting at like $2,700 or even $1,700. I was just wondering if there's, if there's an advantage to putting out the more money for it other than just kind of what you want. I use it for like personal use, looking up, playing music, keeping records of the household and our little farm that we have.
Sure.
So it's not a business. I'm not in the graphics or anything like that.
Sure.
So I just wondered if you could address that. And if since my iMac now is like no good, is there any worth to that machine once the logic board is gone on it?
Sure. Let's start with the last one. The iMac, I don't know how much worth. Depends on how bad that video problem really is. Mm-hmm. But my hunch is, again, if someone were interested in futzing around, you could potentially find a used part somewhere and try and fix it up. If somebody wanted to, take on the project of learning how to take the thing apart and find the right used part, it's going to be a pain in the butt.
Right.
That's about as much worth, I would suggest, as it has.
Okay.
But don't get rid of it until you have something new and you can transfer your data over.
Oh, yeah. Well, I have an external hard drive, so I have that isn't a problem. I just kind of think, I like it so much. But
yeah. But even with bad video, the rest of the machine is still functioning, so you can use it and get your data off. And,
right.
And Apple has a thing called Migration Assistant, which will very easy and very completely pull all your data over.
Okay.
In terms of laptops, the big difference for you, because horsepower doesn't sound like it's of the highest importance for you, the big difference between the different Mac models in the laptop arena is screen size. Excuse me. The MacBook has a 13-inch screen.
Right.
And if you're working from the built-in display a lot, that might feel a little claustrophobic, depending upon what you do. So as you go up the line, you get a bigger screen to 15 and eventually 17, which gives you a lot more screen real estate to work with. Right. Now, the flip side of this is you have to haul around that screen real estate.
Yeah.
So I've got a 17-inch MacBook Pro because I'm a big guy, and this is no problem for me to sling it over my shoulder and hop on my bicycle and go somewhere.
Uh-huh.
For other people who are half my size, this MacBook is a monster, and they could never haul it around. So you'd want to take a look. What I would do is go into an Apple store if you can. Open up a Word document or a web page that you're used to seeing,
mm-hmm.
and take a look and see how does that look on each one of the displays.
Yeah.
How much scrolling do you have to do on the small screen versus the big screen?
Right.
And you know, if you can see enough of the web pages that you usually go to, or you can see enough of a Word document that you usually work on, and you're okay with that screen size, all of these MacBooks can drive an external display. So if you spend most of your time at home, you could get a fairly low-cost display. You can get a 19, 20-inch LCD these days for about $200. You could put a nice big display at home, plug it into your MacBook when you sit at your desk most of the time, work on this nice display there, and then the only time you have to deal with a little display is when you actually have it in
right.
your lap on a plane or in a train or something like that.
Right. Right.
So that sometimes, you know, makes things a little bit easier. But again, you've got, you know, your cost of the MacBook and now an external display, so
right.
you start inching towards the cost of buying a bigger display.
Exactly.
But for you, I suspect that the biggest differentiating factor is screen size and weight.
And should I still consider that I need more than 2 gigabytes of memory available? You told the previous guy?
All of the new Apple MacBooks will handle at least 4 gigabytes of RAM, and I believe it's actually 6. The newest round is 6 gigs.
Do you recommend putting that into it right away?
I would suggest you start off with at least 2, and I think they all ship with at least 2. I think maybe the lower end ship with 1. Getting 2 gigs of memory is very inexpensive. Buying memory directly from Apple, like having them put it into the factory, is outrageously expensive. Don't do it.
Oh, okay.
It's silly. But even if you go to the Apple store, they even know that, so they'll sell you third-party memory, which is drastically less expensive. You know, it's not Apple-approved, but it's like a light bulb. It's either going to work or it's not.
Yeah.
You're going to know very fast.
Well,
because I had
added memory to my iMac. Maybe I could take that out and put it into the MacBook, but is that possible?
No, they use different kinds of RAM.
All right. Of course not.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, I won't keep you. Thank you so very much.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And, Joe, thank you. Boy, the time flew.
It really does. I'm always surprised.
I'm sorry we didn't get to all the emails and all the calls, but your website again, give that website.
Is joerodes.com/WPR. And even if you get the slash part, I've got a link right at the top of my Wayne website, which will direct you to my blog. It's where I've not been very good about updating it, but I will do it, I promise.
Joe Rhodes, our guest. Go to joerodes.com, and Rhodes is R-H-O-D-E-S.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Joe. We'll look forward to your next visit.
Great, thanks.
Appreciate it very much. Joe has been a Macintosh support specialist for a long time, since 1999, and he's been doing it unprofessionally for several years before that, so it's always great to have him come by and talk about Macs, and he will do it again, I'm sure of that. Coming up, we're going to take a look at that spring thaw photography with Jack Socha, next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.